Welcome in, everybody, to the Locked On Eagles podcast. It's Louis DiBiase, as always, alongside one of my co-hosts in crime, Mr. Lars Lewis, on this Monday edition of the show. What's up, Lars?
This beat is fire.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
This is a mix of, this is a remix of the Fox theme. Is that the best one?
I think it is the best theme song for anything in the NFL. For
really?
All of sport? Ooh, it's tough.
So, Fox is the one, obviously, growing up with, if you're an NFC guy.
Right.
But, you know, CBS I always liked. Growing up in Buffalo, Bill's family, I am the only Eagles guy in the family. I was an independent kid, Lars. So I kind of...
Rebellious.
Yeah, I chose my own thing. But the CBS song was always pretty good, too. But the one that gets my blood flowing the most, Sunday Night Football on NBC, I think. Monday Night Football used to be it, I think, for people that grew up in the 90s. But for me, Sunday Night Football kind of, and it really has, it's overtaken Monday Night Football. But Fox is up there.
I think with Monday Night Football, there's two different styles of theme for Monday Night Football. The first one is Heavy Action by Mr. Pearson. And the second one is the Hank Williams version. Because I'm not acknowledging the third version that we've seen in recent years.
Right. And NFL music in general is fantastic. Like, NFL films music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Lombardi... Nothing hits my emotional strings more than the Lombardi Trophy theme. Because it's when they present the trophy, and it's
right.
A Hall of Famer that brings it down, and there's players surrounding him on both sides, touching the trophy, kissing
there's
it.
There's something majestic.
And I always dreamed...
About it.
Right, and as a kid, growing up as an Eagles fan, always dreamed every single year seeing that, with the music playing in the background, seeing that Hall of Famer carry the trophy down with players around them. I dreamed of one day that being a reality with Philadelphia, and that's why I think that moment, which luckily enough I have on video in 2017, that moment I think was the when it really sank in for me that the Eagles won the Super Bowl, I think.
See, I have a different attitude towards that. You want to know what my favorite is?
Yeah.
The next one.
I like that. And this is no April Fool's. The Eagles actually won the Super Bowl. It's still, I know it's been, you know, it's 2019 now. It's still really, I don't think it'll ever sink in until we win the next one.
It'll be referenced once every few podcasts.
But you know what? It wasn't an April Fool's joke. And today is April Fool's. Lars, you get any bad jokes on you today? Anyone pull anything on you?
Too many.
Oh, yeah.
Too many. A lot of text messages and ignored all of them.
A lot of, like, breaking news, this team trades for this guy, Eagles trade for so-and-so.
You see, as someone who is a journalism major, as you and I are, we're not easily fooled.
Yeah.
See, don't
used
get...
to be. I used to fall for those fake Adam Schefter Twitter accounts.
Always check that blue check mark. Don't
right.
get got.
We did a whole podcast, me and Gino, on we trained our listeners on how to go about the offseason. That was a big part, was beware of the scam Twitter accounts telling you that the Eagles just signed.
If it's too good to be true, it is.
Right. But I was thinking about this in an Eagles perspective with April Fools. Because there was a lot of times, at least throughout the past, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, where something almost happened. And it's like, it's not April Fools. Like, April Fools, you know, gotcha. But at the same time, it's something that, like, it almost was a reality. And now looking back, it's kind of like an April Fool's joke that, man, this wasn't actually reality, but it almost was. So I put up a thread on Twitter, at DBSCLOE, shameless plug, and I threw out some pictures.
Oh, you're shameless.
Like, I love the Photoshop jobs fans do of, like, a player's in the draft is projected to go to this team, and they Photoshop that jersey of that team on.
Yeah, it usually pops up around mid-April.
Right, so... I put up a bunch of those, and obviously one of the
oh
first
my
ones,
God.
The biggest one is Marcus Mariota. Like, in 2015, the speculation from January up until April, even until the Titans were on the clock at pick 2, like, people still thought at that point Chip Kelly was still going to do it and trade for Mariota. Like, that's the biggest one that's like, that almost happened.
I know that you're still clamoring for a 30-for-30 about what happened in that
room. I'm so curious. I'm clamoring really just for a 30-for-30 about that year with
mm-hmm.
Chip Kelly, with the power struggle of Howie Roseman and Chip, and overhauling the roster, trading McCoy, pretty much ghosting Jeremy Maclin until the last second, not getting Frank Gore, who's another guy I put in this thread.
April Fool's,
and it's a picture of Frank Gore with an Eagles background, because he committed after they traded McCoy. It was going to be Frank Gore and Ryan Matthews, I think, before they changed. You know, of course, they had to think on their feet and go with DeMarco Murray. Looking back, Frank Gore would have been a lot better of an option.
Speaking of running backs, we'll be touching on that later on in today's podcast.
And yeah, coming up on today's show as well, Duke Johnson has requested a trade. He did not show up to the opening of team activities with the Cleveland Browns today as they introduced Odell Beckham at his press conference with Jarvis Landry, Myles Garrett, and Baker Mayfield. Duke Johnson was MIA. They want to trade him. The Eagles, with the Dallas Cowboys, expressed interest originally, and it still seems like the Eagles are interested even after trading for Jordan Howard, so we'll get into that. But, yeah, Frank Gore is another guy. Remember, he changed his mind from Philadelphia to Indianapolis because he had clearly didn't have faith that the Eagles were going to add a quarterback. I think that's at least what – I mean, I feel like he chose Andrew Luck instead of what could have been at the time Marcus Mariota, but no one really knew, and it was right before they made the trade for Sam Bradford. So they had Nick Foles.
I think he still made the right decision.
Yeah, I think he made the right call, but Frank Gore wasn't. I wish Sam Bradford was an April Fool's joke. I wish I could say that one wasn't real.
Is his whole career an April Fool's joke?
Well, not for him, considering he...
And certainly not for the executives that paid him an exorbitant amount of money.
He's the biggest bandit in NFL history. But
Do you think him and Jeff Fisher have the same agent?
Oh, they have to.
How about Marvin Lewis, too?
Yeah, that's right. Are those the three biggest cockroaches in the NFL that just would never go away? Frank Gore is one of them, but he's justified in
Yeah, at least he's productive.
Right. Yeah, Sam Bradford was definitely a bandit. A couple of the other ones I put up on this thread, Johnny Manziel photoshopped in an Eagles jersey, because no one really talks about this one a lot, and because it was right after Nick Foles threw for 27 touchdowns and 2 picks. But when Chip Kelly was on the clock, I still remember Rich Eisen talking about it because Chip recruited Johnny Manziel to Oregon. Remember, it didn't end up happening, but Manziel and Chip had this connection. And while Foles did throw 27 touchdowns and 2 picks, clearly Chip wasn't convinced. So I really am convinced, though, personally, that he did consider Manziel there. He did move out of that pick that eventually became the Manziel pick, only the Eagles traded with the Cleveland Browns. The Browns ended up taking Money Manziel. But for a couple minutes there, I thought that was actually going to happen. And truthfully, a younger Lou was into it. Because
That makes a ton of sense.
At the age of the susceptible age of 16, Johnny Manziel was a big thing for me.
Like you and Marcus Mariota.
Teddy Bridgewater was my guy that year. But Manziel, the hype, yeah, I was excited. I thought that was going to happen. I think a lot of people did. I think it was a realistic possibility that Chip considered it, considering what he did a year later, trading Foles anyway, for Sam Bradford. So, yeah, that was another one. And then I put up Carson Wentz photoshopped in a Rams jersey. They had the choice. They picked one. They took Jared Goff. And I lie. I say that I would have been okay with both, but I wouldn't have been. I was a nervous wreck when the Rams took almost the entire clock. When they were on the clock with that first,
I'd imagine that they actually really thought that out the entire time.
Do you think that because the report was the Eagles were okay with both, they worked out both, they met with both repeatedly? I don't buy it. I think Wentz was their guy from the start. I mean, obviously they would have took Goff, right? They had to have known there was a possibility that the Rams could have changed their mind at any point. So, I mean, to me, the Eagles were confident that they knew they were getting Wentz at 2. They had to, though, have been okay with both because, again, they don't control that. Even if they had to get
one of the two, regardless, because they needed a quarterback.
Yeah, they must have been okay with it, even though they probably thought they were 99.9% sure. They must have been okay with it since they trade up for 2 before they knew what the Rams.
We'll likely never know.
But yeah, Carson Wentz and Sean McVay's offense, I think it would take it to another level.
Because
when the Super Bowl happens and Jared Goff. When Bill Belichick breaks
their
offense,
they'd have beaten the Patriots with Wentz.
You need a guy to make plays outside of the system. That would
Jared Goff looked like a scared kid.
Yeah, but I put up those. Game. It was on my April Fool's Eagles thread. It was Mariota, Manziel, Wentz in a Rams jersey, and then Frank Gore.
One is not like the other. One's a running back, and the other three are quarterbacks.
And then, unfortunately, Sam Bradford actually happened, so can't say that wasn't an April Fool's joke. Coming up next on the Lockdown Eagles podcast, we move it to our running back talk.
There's a game. Is there a game involved?
It's been, and there is a game. We're going to do a name game with you, Lars. We did it with Gino on the Jordan Howard reaction podcast.
Okay.
Even though Jordan Howard has been traded to the Eagles, running back is still a major talking point in Philadelphia.
A pass-catching running back.
That's what they need, and Duke Johnson could be that. We've talked about it in the podcast a couple times.
He's that guy.
But we're going to revisit it now that Duke Johnson appears to himself has made the progression that he wants out of Cleveland. So that's coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase, Lars Lewis. You can always check out our previous shows on LockedOnEagles.com, the Himalayan Podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Anywhere that you listen to podcasts, just tell Siri, just tell Alexa to play the Locked On Eagles podcast. We appreciate everyone that's subscribed to the show, that's left us some really nice reviews, that's contributed to the conversation on Twitter as well. Even after the show is over, Lars, you know I'm on Twitter 24/7. Just hit me up at DiBiase, LOE, at LarsLewis12, Gino.
Not exactly on 24/7.
Right, but don't worry, I will.
I'll get to you when I can.
And then Gino, of course, at Gino_LOE, and the show page at LockedOnBirds. So let's get into now, I want to revisit the Duke Johnson talk, Lars, considering he did not show up to the facilities today with Cleveland. They have Nick Chubb already, a guy they really like in the second round, took a big step in his rookie year, was really the primary focal point. It's why they were comfortable enough to trade Carlos Hyde to Jacksonville. And then they signed Kareem Hunt, who, yes, he's going to be suspended.
The first 8 games?
Yes. Eight games, or was it 10?
I think.
Not 100% sure, but he's going to miss at least the first half of the season.
Right.
So maybe that's a reason why they haven't dealt Duke Johnson yet. Maybe that's why they're holding out for more. But Duke Johnson now has kind of really forced their hand and really hurt their leverage, because Duke Johnson wants out. And he wants playing time, and I understand that. I mean, the guy's been extremely productive. He hasn't really gotten the rushing workload that maybe he wants, but yet still pretty effective. Averaged 5 yards a carry last year on 40 attempts. The year before on 82 attempts.
He is so good in the pass game.
Averaged 4.2 yards per carry, 4 rushing touchdowns. But the big thing is the passing game. 74 receptions in 2017. For 693 yards and 3 touchdowns, averaged 9.4 yards a catch. Then last year, 47 catches, 429 yards, 9.1 yards per catch, and 3 touchdowns. So he has six touchdowns receiving the past 2 years, over 110 receptions, over 1,000 yards. If we're going to talk about a player to complement Jordan Howard, so a player that, much like what they had in 2017 with Jay Ajayi and Blunt as the power guys, and then you had Corey Clement in the new Darren Sproles role. If they're going to go towards that route again, but not have it be with Darren Sproles, who, by the way, is going to wait till May to decide what he's going to do, a.k.a. much like Chris Long, he's going to wait to see what the Eagles do in the draft, or if they add more running backs in any avenue. They could still sign a guy like T.J. Yeldon, too. There's other free agents still available. But if they decide to go for someone to complement Jordan Howard and Corey Clement, Duke Johnson over a rookie, I think, makes sense, especially if, I mean, again, the Browns don't have a lot of leverage, much like the Bears didn't with Jordan Howard. Once the player really wants out, especially when Cleveland has multiple other running backs and a guy like Howie Roseman knows that you're not really going to hold out for him, even if you keep him at the deadline, that's going to be something you can revisit if you don't address running back in another significant way, or if injuries happen like it did with Ajayi last year. So even if the Browns hold out right now, the minute Kareem Hunt comes back, you have little to no leverage whatsoever with Duke Johnson. So I'm a fan of it again. I think that Duke Johnson can do more. I think I talk about getting a do-it-all running back. Of course, I would prefer someone like Josh Jacobs, or we'll get into the rookie name game with you. But for me, a guy like Daryl Henderson is someone I'd still prefer. But I think Duke Johnson's a guy that, with his receiving ability, and it's a different kind of receiving back like Darren Sproles, this is a guy that can line up in the slot. He can catch contested passes. He's got a much wider route tree, if you ask me, a capable route tree, compared to a guy like Sproles. Just because Sproles' size, he's limited more to what he can do in the receiving game than a Duke Johnson. So, and I think he's a better runner than maybe people give him credit for. He's 5'9", 210 pounds. He's not the smallest running back. He's certainly not the biggest, but he's been pretty efficient in that role as well. I really like the idea, and he's not even making that much money. I think it's a good idea. They could go for a rookie still anyway. That's the thing, too. It doesn't have to be Duke Johnson versus a rookie. He signed a contract extension last year, but Jordan Howard, remember, is a free agent next year.
And so, he's on the books for what, $2 million?
Yeah.
For this year?
And they can get a comp pick back if Jordan Howard signs somewhere else. Say Jordan Howard has a pretty solid 2019 season. He can go somewhere else. The Eagles get a compensatory pick back. And you have Duke Johnson still there, who's young. You still have Corey Clement. That's why, to me, because of Howard's question mark when it comes to the future in Philadelphia, he's almost a one-year rental, much like Golden Tate was. Maybe, depending on what they want to do.
It's a kind of move that says we're winning the Super Bowl.
But it would make sense for me if they wanted to draft a Mike Weber later on in the draft, or a James Williams on top of, or a Darwin Thompson, my guy, or, you know, someone like that on top of having Duke Johnson. But if they were to just choose one, What do you think they'll do? What do you think they should do? Let's play a name game. Duke Johnson versus the rookie running back class. I'll say Duke Johnson or Daryl Henderson from Memphis. To me, the most explosive running back in this draft, probably going to be somewhere in the second round, maybe third. Duke or Daryl Henderson, Lars? And let's say, hypothetically, Duke Johnson's going to cost a fifth-round pick.
Duke Johnson
for a fifth or Daryl Henderson?
Duke Johnson.
Duke Johnson or Miles Sanders? I really like Miles Sanders. I think I would take him. I would take Henderson and Sanders over Duke Johnson.
Miles Sanders.
So you like Miles Sanders over Daryl Henderson?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. David Montgomery, another do-it-all back from Iowa State, or Duke Johnson?
Duke Johnson.
Okay. More explosive for sure. Duke Johnson or Devin Singletary?
Duke Johnson.
Duke Johnson or my guy Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State?
Way to put me on the spot, Lou.
Bruce is my RB2, Lars. Had him on the show last week. I think he's
seen his film. I like
it. It could be Duke Johnson for a fifth-round pick or Bruce Anderson.
It's a bit of a cop-out. Both.
Well, let's say, though, they get rid of their fifth-round pick for Duke. That could be the pick to take Bruce Anderson. I'm not letting you get off the hook. You got to choose one.
Duke Johnson.
Because let's just say it's one of them for a fifth-round pick.
Duke Johnson.
All right, so the only guy you would take, and I'm assuming you would take Josh Jacobs.
Yes.
Thank you. Duke Johnson, you would take Miles Sanders, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I would disagree. I would rather have Daryl Henderson.
I'm a guy that likes – here's my perspective when it comes to looking at players.
Okay.
If I got a guy that's available for a fifth-round pick, and I've already seen what he can do – and he's something that fills a need for the next couple of years, and he's on a cheap deal, I want to take the guy who's already proven it.
No, I get
over
that.
Someone who has a ton of upside.
I guess it depends.
But
on
I haven't
what
seen
you,
a down out of him
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you want. I think it, to me, depends on what you want the role of that player to be. So if you are okay with, again, if you're going to run a committee and you want complementary styles, if you want the power back in Howard, you want the lower level of a do-it-all guy in Corey Clement, and then you want a Duke Johnson's going to be your passing down back, your third down back, that's fine. Then I get that. If that's the role you want, then sure. Then you'd rather have the known commodity than
a... The thing is, you got your thumper this year in Jordan Howard, and there's probably thumpers in the draft
next
year.
Sure, I get that. You'd rather have a known commodity than a Devin Singletary. I get that, but for me, I want that guy eventually to have the upside of being a player that would be, even if you're in a committee, I mean, everyone rotates running backs, but even if you're in that style, I eventually want one of those guys to have the upside that they can become that main focal point of the running back.
I think a big role we also should play is price. Duke Johnson comes at a very low price.
Yeah,
especially knowing the fact that he wants out and he drives the price down because now Cleveland's in a position where they have to trade him and they don't have the kind of leverage saying, oh, but we like this guy and we want to keep him. Duke's like, nah, fam, I want out.
Yeah, so Daryl Henderson and Miles Sanders.
My thought process.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think Henderson and Sanders would both cost one of those two picks in the second round, or if you deal back up in the third. So it's, I guess you could say Duke Johnson in like a fifth for one of those guys in the second or third.
Because I still have.
But a Bruce Anderson in the fifth, or like if Devin Singletary fell to the fourth round compared to Duke for one of those picks, that's where I kind of am like, all right, I'm in on the rookie. But I get where you're coming from. What about a player potentially being traded? Gino tweeted this out, and I wanted to give this a mention on the show because I think it's worth talking about, considering they have six of these guys now that they re-signed Ronald Darby, unto my liking. What about Jalen Mills to Cleveland? They don't have Peppers anymore.
He's on the last year of his deal, right?
He is.
Hmm.
So, but for Cleveland, this is for Duke Johnson, who, you, again, like you said, no leverage whatsoever. You clearly don't plan on him being a focal point as you went out of your way to grab Chubb last year, and you added Carlos Hyde, too. So they've been adding talent in front of Duke Johnson for years, and then you bring in Kareem Hunt. That's the kind of guy that you're dealing already. Would you rather have a fifth-round pick, or would you rather have a Jalen Mills, who you could consider signing to a contract extension, and even if you don't, for 1 year, you've got a versatile player who played safety at LSU. I know Jabril Peppers went to the Giants in the Odell Beckham trade. You need a guy that could play that role. He's played corner in the NFL, but he can be a safety. And he's a guy that at cornerback has played to a high level in big moments.
And on top of that, Philadelphia is so bloated in that position, they're going to have to trade someone.
And then it doesn't allow Jim Schwartz to force Mills' way into the starting lineup. And it gives guys like Sidney Jones a chance. It gives guys like Rasul Douglas a chance if Schwartz actually allows
Cravion LeBlanc.
And doesn't put in a guy like Dexter McDougal in the slot. I'm still salty about how Schwartz handled Rasul Douglas last year. But that's the thing, too, is it allows you a little bit more breathing room when it comes to the cornerback group. It allows you to evaluate these guys more, because right now, if you're the front office, and Schwartz definitely has say in this, I'm sure he's collaborating with the front office, but at the same time, if you're the front office and you really want to evaluate Avante Maddox and Cravion LeBlanc and Sidney Jones, who you really need to evaluate when we're talking about
this
Sidney
is
Jones,
the cheese that you give Cleveland.
So if you could get rid of a guy in Mills, who to me has the lowest ceiling of any of them, and that has a expiring contract with an injury right now, I'm not sure if Cleveland would do this straight up, considering Mills' injury and the contract expiring next year. But if they did, I would be in on this if I was the Eagles. Because once again, then I can only really... Because right now, realistically, Lars, you might have three of these corners on the bench. Whereas if you move Mills, you could consider playing Maddox as that third safety instead of Sendejo. Or, I mean, you could draft another guy, but you could have Maddox be that versatile piece that roams around and then have a combination of Darby and then Rasul, Sid, and Cravion, two of those three, and then there's only one guy on the bench. So that, to me, is a win-win where you're getting a cheap player that's in a perfect role in Doug Peterson's offense in Duke Johnson, and you're allowing more breathing room for these young corners.
So what about this? How about this trade that I would propose? So Duke Johnson for Jalen Mills and a sixth. Jalen Mills and a fifth.
I would consider that because they have two fourths from the Compic formula. They have that mm-hmm. extra fourth. They have an extra sixth this year because of the Compic formula. Next year, you're going to have an extra third. You're going to have an extra fourth because of deals with Nick Foles to Jacksonville. And
if they could somehow make that work, I could see Cleveland doing that.
I would, if it was Mills and a fifth for Duke, I'd consider it. I like the idea of trading Mills and or a low pick.
Because like you said, it frees up the secondary, and it frees up guys like Sewell, like Cravion LeBlanc, like Avante Maddox, guys who played so well late in the season going into the playoffs, and Sidney Jones as well.
They have to find out what they have in Sidney Jones.
You can't just keep leaving him on the bench all year.
Well, and he's got to stay healthy, of course. I'm not blaming the coaching staff. The coaching staff, Schwartz did make him the starting slot corner last year. But to me, if Mills is there, that is Schwartz's guy. And I cannot see a scenario where if Mills is on the roster and he's healthy, that Schwartz puts him on the bench. And to me, that's going to really hurt you. That's going to hurt your evaluation process with those other guys. So I like the idea. Let's take one final break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast, this Monday edition of the show. We are in April. It's April Fool's, ladies and gentlemen. We are 25 days away from the start of the NFL draft. The Eagles pick at 25 for now. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the show. Louis DiBiase and Lars Lewis wrapping up here. Got into some April Fool's Eagles content. With Mariota,
you and your
Johnny
shenanigans,
football.
Lou.
I love the what ifs. I'm a big what ifs guy when it comes to the Eagles.
You're also saying that we can have a rover land on Uranus.
That's true. Low key space guy, but don't let the listeners know that. That's my other passion.
Too late.
That's for my other podcast, the Locked On Space podcast. That'd be a
that is an April Fool.
I could do a daily podcast of that. I could get into that.
I could buy a ticket
to
hear
that. I can get
into
a theory every single day, 5 days a week. We'll put up a poll, see who wants. No, I'm just kidding. They'd probably hear my voice in the podcast. So wrapping up real quick, Jordan Howard talked to the media today, Lars, and he said a couple interesting things. One that I noted was that the Eagles had a deal in place, or at least Howard expected to be an Eagle for a while now. And that makes sense for me why maybe they weren't as aggressive going after a guy like Tevin Coleman, who...
And also why Duke Johnson didn't get picked up either.
Right. Maybe they just... Howard was the preference... And it explains why Tevin Coleman only got a $5 million deal with the 49ers. The Eagles seemingly liked him, but yet they weren't in on that. So, and I get that. I don't know if it's the right call just in a vacuum. If we compare Jordan Howard to Mark Ingram and Tevin Coleman, who got similar deals with Baltimore and San Fran, I would take both of those guys over Jordan Howard on the field. But when we're considering comp pick considerations,
cost,
more money for those two, and options you have of finding another receiving back in the draft and still guys like TJ Yeldon that are out there and Duke Johnson, I get it. I do. I think personally
it's a great idea.
Yeah, I think Howard and those factors versus just Tevin Coleman or Mark Ingram.
It's not like Jordan Howard doesn't have any talent.
No, and he talked about today how DeSean Jackson in that passing game is going to open up space for him. And that's true.
That's his style though. When you have the passing attack that Philadelphia has, and you got a thumper like Jordan Howard, It just opens up so many holes for the Lion, with as good as the Lion is for Philadelphia. You got Jason Peters back, you got Lane Johnson, you got Kelsey. You have such a great Lion in front of you.
Yeah.
And I say the Lion was good in Chicago. I think this Lion's even better. And you see what he can do? It's going to be frightening to see the kind of holes he has. Because when you look at last year, Philadelphia had a hard time running in between the tackles. It was a nightmare for a lot of the year.
And
it had to do with...
struggled in the beginning, and then it was Josh Adams and that running back group. In the end, just... Again, Josh Adams was, I think, in 8 carries on 3rd and 4th down with only 2 or less yards to go. He was 0 for 8. And that's, like, when we're talking about conversions. Jordan Howard, 74% conversion rate on 3rd and 4th and short.
So, he's the guy that was missing for that offense.
So when we're talking about guys that were going to be rotational pieces anyway, with Mark Ingram, Tevin Coleman, and Howard, the fact that you wanted to go for a niche where you replace LeGarrette Blount now with Jordan Howard, although he doesn't break as many tackles as LeGarrette Blount, he's certainly someone that's good in short yardage and is a proven back that even on a down year, he can still get 900-plus rushing yards. With the receiving options they still have, I like it.
There's going to come a time where it's going to be a big game if you're playing Dallas and the division's on the line,
and you want
and you got a 3rd and 1 at midfield, and you're driving to try to win the game. Jordan Howard is the reason why is the reason why you signed him to get that 3rd and 1 late in the game.
It's a nice option to have, especially when you're having there's these games where like late in the game, Lars, the Eagles' offensive line just takes over. I go to that Giants game this year, that second game that really saved the season, if you ask me. And that offensive line just took over in the second half. Josh Adams was tearing it up because of that front four. And when you have the option, especially when you're running it down their throats, of having a Jordan Howard, a Jay Ajayi, a LeGarrette Blount, it can really just discourage defenses. It can be degrading when you have, especially if they add another fast guy that has success as a rookie on the field, and then that guy gives you troubles, and then you throw in the big body that is Jordan Howard on 3rd and 2 and just keeps the drive alive. I mean, that's having that thumper, having that size there, hopefully he can break more tackles this year. Having that is such a huge just commodity that the Eagles like to have the past couple of years. So.
And there's going to be games where the passing attack's just not going to be there.
Mm.
It's going to happen, regardless of how great that unit is.
I don't know, man.
It's the NFL. It's the NFL, man. There's going to be a game where it's going to be tight, it's going to be running, and Jordan Howard's going to be the kind of guy you can depend on if you're going to have to run him 20 to 25 times.
Yeah, it's going
to
be exciting.
It happens
to
every offense.
Yeah. I don't know, though. This one's got a lot of options.
I don't know about you, Lou, but I've watched football even longer than you. I've seen this happen to even the likes of Kurt Warner's Rams and among the other elite offenses. There's going to be a game where you're going to have to run the ball.
Well, I'm excited about the addition regardless, and I think a guy like Duke Johnson would be a nice 1-2 punch with Howard, and then you sprinkle in Corey Clement. But we'll see what they do. They still got plenty of time to add other running backs. Thank you, everyone, for listening to today's edition of Locked on Eagles with Louis DiBiase and Lars Lewis. Please subscribe to the show if you haven't already. You can find it on any podcast platform, and as well, LockedOnEagles.com and our Twitter accounts at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiase LOE, at Gino_LOE, and Lars is at LarsLewis12. Lars, thanks for coming on the show again.
Louis, thank you so much for having me. It's always great to talk Eagles football, even in the early parts of April. Ladies and gentlemen, 3 more weeks. We're heading to the draft. And, man, we got a big mock coming up for you very soon.
Absolutely.
And some big news later on.
A lot more coverage here on Locked on Eagles, as always. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Birds.